Well, first of all, I'd like to welcome everyone taking time from all of your busy days to join us. We're going to be talking today about some data and modeling issues having to do with the ARC's move towards synthesis. And the little group of people that you see listed down at the bottom of the slide were drawn from the ARC's committee, and we decided that we needed to begin a dialogue on how best to manage our thinking about data and modeling issues, of which there are many, with respect to affording the synthesis that ARCS is moving towards as a NSF program. So if we advance one slide, those of you on the phone probably all know that the Arctic System Science program is in fact reformulating its thinking around issues of synthesis and integrative research. The primary goal of that move is to improve our understanding of how the Arctic is functioning as a system, and also to identify its particular niche or its particular role in the functioning of the larger Earth and climate systems. We have been working on this transformation as a community for the last few years, and we've actually engaged in some concrete synthesis activities, one of which was capstoned by a paper, Overpeck et al., 2005, that was published in ESAGU Transactions. This lays out some scientific hypotheses about how the Arctic system is operating and what its potential ultimate state is. And for those of you who didn't see that particular article, I would encourage you to do so. It's very interesting capstone to a synthesis effort that took a consensus view on this problem. The knowledge demands of what we call an increasingly urgent policy debate also demand that we understand the dynamics of the Arctic at these larger scales, because it does have enormous impact potentially on the functioning of the Earth system and the trajectory of climate change. And certainly the ACIA and the IPCC would be very important users of the information that would be flowing from an Arctic system-wide synthesis effort. Next slide. At the same time, I think it's fair to say that the history of the ARCS research program was based largely and historically on what we might term more disciplinary study, studies of terrestrial systems, ocean dynamics, ocean atmosphere, as well as paleoclimatology studies. So for example, LAII and OAII, Chiba, were derived from this kind of more disciplinary thinking. Now, at once, these studies are important benchmarks. They have provided us with critical understanding into how some of the major components across the Arctic system are behaving. They used a very broad array of approaches and techniques, including process-level experiments and descriptive studies, in-situ observations, as well as the use of remote sensing, time series analysis and other statistical studies, and indeed simulation modeling. So lots and lots of different approaches and methods that were applied to these more traditional disciplinary studies. At the same time, this knowledge was not necessarily moving us into a setting in which the data sets could be transferred smoothly among the studies, among the researchers, and among the disciplines. And in particular, these impediments to this information flow are in part derived from the fact that in many cases we have discipline-specific or in many cases project-specific models that were developed or data sets that were employed in a sense on an ad hoc basis that became highly specialized in their structure, very particular in terms of their resolutions, as well as their spatial and temporal domains of interest that did not necessarily always match up. There also were many data restrictions, or have been many data restrictions and data policies that prevent the information from flowing out to the research community or from one institution to another. And in particular, we're thinking that human and social science data sets are not always freely available. I could also mention to you that from my own work that some of the hydrometeorological data sets are not always freely available, and they're subject to all sorts of restrictions by the collecting agencies and the governments that are investing in actually monitoring this information. And then as well, the typical PI is focused on his or her science, and I think it's fair to say that by and large there's not a in place a community framework or community setting for wide data dissemination and as well the transference of knowledge about how models are built across the community. There's no formal structure for doing that, and in some sense we can argue that it has been more or less on an ad hoc basis. Now the consequence is that if we're talking about synthesis and we're talking about panarctic domains, we see that there are numerous opportunities that are missed in terms of seeing the large-scale patterns that are emerging, as well as what the basic system properties are at the largest of scales, which in some sense is the essence of synthesis. Next slide, please. At the same time, we see that there are numerous emerging opportunities that could be built around modeling and data systems that would help us afford better synthesis. And some examples are presented in this slide, where major new observational and modeling initiatives are moving forward. And chief among them, and certainly this is not an exhaustive list, is the International Polar Year and the mobilization of a large national and international community to begin to monitor the condition of both poles over a two-year period commencing in 2007. There is a longer time frame planning exercise that's been going on as part of the ICARP-2, the International Conference on Arctic Research Planning, and that's moving forward and from a 10 to 15-year time horizon for instituting linked observational and modeling initiatives to bring together a more coherent picture of emerging changes in the Arctic. CERCH, of course, as a U.S. National multi-agency initiative is moving forward, and it has at its heart both the monitoring and modeling interests of the community. There is also the Coordinated Environmental Observation Program, CEOP, that was spawned within the GWEX community that's attempting to take broad-scale snapshots of, in particular, the hydrosphere of the Earth, including the Arctic regions. We also have an emerging multinational, I think there are now 62 nations that have signed on to the GEO Convention, and the idea here is to develop a global environmental system of systems using satellite and in-situ data sets deployed broadly and globally to understand, to benchmark and then understand the changes that are occurring to the world's environmental systems. So these are major technological developments that we could, from which we could develop comprehensive and coherent picture both of the past, present, and future states of the Panarctic system. And in particular, these gain strength by using data to force models, but in addition, using data sets in a creative way to assimilate this information into operational pictures of various environmental systems. We believe that ARCS can help catalyze and benefit enormously from a coordinated data synthesis, data and modeling synthesis strategy that will capitalize on some of these emerging new capabilities. In the next slide, we basically posing the question around which we will be moving our discussion, and that is, what modeling and data integration methods, what approaches, what activities could best contribute to synthesis and uncover some new insights into the workings of the Arctic system. And if you press the button again here, before we actually open that dialogue, we'd like to provide a few examples of the types of things we're thinking about in terms of how we might better afford synthesis through creative use of data sets and models.
So, and, Charlie, there are a couple of comments people have made.
Sure.
It might be useful. I don't know if it...
It's up to you if you want to go through the entire talk or we should stop. It's fine with me either way.
Thanks.
Would you like to take some questions? That's fine.
There are just a couple of comments but on
sure.
the chat line. Helen, do you want to...
Yeah, Paul Bienhoff and Lil Lessa both had a comment with one of your earlier slides.
Okay, you want to go back to that slide?
I don't think it's necessary. Paul, just, do you want to make your comment?
Yeah, well, Charlie, the when you were talking about the ad hoc basis of where the data goes, I think all of the recent National Science Foundation sponsored Arctic Science has been directed to put their data in National Snow and Ice Data Center. But,
right.
Again, that doesn't really address the issue of making it easily accessible to other folks that would be doing similar research.
Right. No, that's a good point. I think we're all bound by the rules by which our grants are conveyed to us to make sure that that information is conveyed. But I guess the point would be made is that that is something that we've had our feet held to that fire, as opposed to something that we begin to think about from the earliest days of our research. And the typical researcher is not a typical data person. And in some sense, the science and the data have been treated separately. And it does require some forceful movement by the foundation and our data sponsors to get that information into an archive. So I think the point to be made is that we could probably, by thinking more about how to use data and models from the start in our research, we might actually be able to promote some better science from this.
I agree. Thank you.
Yep. And Charlie, Neil has his hand raised.
Yep.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a clarification. I suspect that you know it, but what we require or request or demand, whatever you want to call it, is not that people put their data into the NSIDC, but that they put their data into a data center.
Right.
And we try to capture at least the metadata in the ADCC. So given that, in fact, a lot of ARCS data are sitting in a lot of various data centers, one of our challenges is keeping track of that.
Mm-hmm. Did Lil have a question?
No, it's not a question. It's just as it's written, Charlie, and we've talked about this, is are we talking about moving toward like a community-based modeling framework like SLUICE, or are we talking about organizing data?
Well, I think what we're let's progress with the discussion here. The not the discussion, but the presentation, and I think you'll get an idea of what we're talking about. We'd like to keep that open. We don't want, as the AC, we don't want to prescribe what has to be done. What we're trying to do here is we're trying to solicit the inputs of the community in terms of the best way to afford synthesis using creative modeling and creative data strategies, and perhaps data and modeling in tandem. And so as we move through, you'll get an idea of what we've been thinking about, but it's certainly not meant to force this onto the community. We want to make sure that we're capturing some of the more important notions about how to do this, and look to the community to give us some additional insights about other ways to do this.
Thanks.
So stay tuned and chime in maybe in a few minutes, okay?
Gotcha.
All right, so I'm on a slide that poses the basic question that we'd like to be thinking about, and then I make the comment here that before opening this dialogue, before opening it up to the broader community, let's show some examples of what the AC ad hoc group on data and modeling has been thinking along particular lines. So I'm going to press the button on my machine, and I get a cartoon that's actually been drawn from the freshwater integration study. And this is meant to tell us that one of the ways in which synthesis can be afforded is by creating clear focal points for the research. And this particular diagram showed up in an early scoping document that the freshwater integration framers had proposed back in year 2000. And what it tried to do is it tried to articulate the major stocks and the major fluxes of water throughout the Panarctic system. And as it turns out, as we moved into the execution phase for the FWI effort, we were able, using ARCS, NSF ARCS funding, to actually populate each of the components with a PI and co-I teams and several projects. And so one of the ways in which we were able to move forward on our synthesis was to have a clear focal point, that is, H2O as a unifying entity across the Panarctic system. And we were able to create a community of researchers around that question. And if you press the button one more time, we actually are attempting to unify our thinking about how to use observations and models. And if you look at the checkerboard, the two checkerboards on the bottom of the screen there, it sort of captures the notion that on the one hand, if we would have to rely on observations alone, if you look at the two axes there, it's meant to depict time horizon on the vertical axis and spatial distribution on the horizontal axis. If we were called upon to understand the Arctic system from observations alone, we would encounter the problem that the observations that we have available to us are quite spatially and temporally fragmented. The quality for any particular area that's been monitored can go from very, very high to very, very low quality. And it becomes an enormous challenge for us to explain how the system would behave in aggregate from this very fragmentary picture based on observations alone. Now, the flip side of this is on the right, and that's looking at the creative use of models. And we have several modeling programs as part of our FWI effort, including full-up Earth system models. And they have the great advantage of having both consistency over time, potentially, and space, where you could actually run the models blanketing the Panarctic region, and you could do so over many different time domains. So you have this continuity in terms of space and time, but you might argue that, and you also have physical consistency, I should say. These Earth system models and GCMs are unified by the constitutive laws, and they are physically consistent. However, you could argue that those particular algorithms that they're using are not fully complete. They don't maintain all the physics or all the biology or all the biogeochemistry or all the hydrology that's defining the dynamics of the Panarctic system. However, you do have this great advantage that it has this blanket coverage. So you have imperfect but blanket coverage on the one hand, and then you have very fragmented but in many cases extremely high quality data sets. So how do we make sense of this? And what we've been trying to do, if we can go to the next slide, what we've been trying to do is we've been trying to cast a set of very concrete exercises to try to explain what's going on. This next slide here shows some updated results from the Peterson et al. A paper which appeared in Science a couple of years ago that documented the sustained rise in discharge of the six north flowing rivers across the Eurasian continent that drain into the Arctic Ocean. And in this little revisit here, we've actually analyzed the statistics of those flow records, and we've in fact confirmed that this trend is real and it's quite statistically significant, and it requires an aggregation over all of the six drainage basins to get that statistical significance. So on the one hand, we've documented the fact using the available information that this is a real phenomenon. And in the right portion of this diagram, the colored time series there, attempts to use this fact, this set of observations, to figure out how the system might be operating. In a sense, it's an inductive pathway of reasoning where we take some very specific outputs and we try to understand how the system as a whole is operating. And you might take issue with the fact that the discharge anomaly that was articulated in Peterson et al. Could be related to the North Atlantic Oscillation or global surface air temperature. But nonetheless, even if you take issue with it, it's an approach to using data and information to infer how the system is working. It's synthetic by its very nature, using what we term the inductive pathway, using the observations alone. In the next slide, I'm presenting here some results that come from the CCSM Polar Working Group models. Marika Holland has been kind enough to give me this slide. And this is emblematic of attempting to do synthesis through Earth system models. So it's in a sense that a checkerboard on the right that I showed earlier. So it's continuous over space and time, yet it might not have all the physics and biology, et cetera. But nonetheless, it does follow a set of rules. And Marika was able to demonstrate that over a 200-year time period, there has been and there is likely to be, along with global climate change, an increase in river runoff. And very interestingly, if you compare the results that's actually coming out of this model versus what the Peterson et al. Paper has shown, they're strikingly similar over the historical record. At the same time, because you have an Earth system model that's united by coherent physics, you can also begin to look at, for example, the sources of the river runoff. Is it coming from precipitation minus evaporation, the so-called net atmospheric convergence? And there's evidence that indeed that is in fact the case. You could also ask yourself the question, because this is all strapped together within a model, what is the ocean export of fresh water and how does that change over time? And she's actually picking up, or this model is picking up, increase in the, as a negative, an export, a larger export of the water phase of freshwater export through the ocean versus the sea ice export, which is reduced over time. So this actually brings together some notions of how the system is pulled together. It might or might not match exactly the observations, but this is what the grand challenge is for us as we do synthesis. The next slide is yet another mode of synthesis in which we attempted to, at the broadest scale, come up with a budget, a freshwater budget for the Pan-Arctic domain. And that's attempting to articulate what the storages are of water in the atmosphere, in the ocean system and land system, and to look at the throughputs, how much water actually comes in from atmospheric transport from the lower latitudes, how much falls as precipitation on the land or ocean, how much gets redistributed back into the atmosphere. And it's quite a simple diagram in spirit, but it took quite a bit of effort to pull this together. It's very synthetic activity using data that was out there already in terms of a heavy reliance on literature-based data. But it also included distillations of current FWI study outputs that were pulled into the service of this task of pulling together this budget. There was also the necessity of creating new data streams that hadn't been processed before, one of which is shown in the upper right, looking at some precipitation data sets from a reanalysis product. And in the end, when you pull all this information together, and you pull all this information that, again, may not have been unified over space or time to the degree we'd want, and may have been collected for entirely different purposes, but when you pull all this information together and try to create a coherent package out of it, the account is surprisingly meaningful in terms of its physics. And Mark is taking the lead on a paper that will be appearing in Climatic Change on this particular effort, and I think it was running on the order of 80 to 90 pages. So it was a major synthesis effort, and yet in the end, it made some physical sense, and it gives us an idea of the pool sizes and the throughputs and the potential reactivity of the system to disturbances. In the in the next slide, there's another mode of synthesis which has become quite popular over the last several years, and that's the intercomparison experiment. And this particular exercise comes from the PILPS-2E effort, and it shows a single drainage basin where a series of models were compared for the snow extent over, I guess, a one-week period simulated for 1995, and you immediately see that there are enormous disparities in our understanding of how the system is put together, and blue could not be more different than dark blue can be not more different than dark red, and you can see that in many cases there's a complete flip-flop in terms of what each of the models is saying is out there on the ground in terms of snow extent, a basic element that you need to get right if you're going to be doing any hydrological research in the Panarctic at the Panarctic degree. So these are very instructive exercises, very data rich and also very model rich, if you will. And you learn an awful lot by trying to figure out why the blue diagram doesn't match the red diagram. Why does panel D not match panel R, for example? And there are ongoing experiments, and these are of evidently great value to the community because they're also being moved forward in terms of the ocean community through the AOMIP project and regional climate models, ArcMIP. In the next slide, there's someone scratching their head, and this is a photograph taken from one of our AC synthesis exercises in which we brought together 30 of the world's experts on the Arctic and Earth system modeling sciences. And we asked these groups to figure out how the Arctic system was working, and it was a bit of an open process, an open challenge, and created lots of stimulating discussion, lots of gnashing of teeth, lots of excitement, and in the end, it did result in a paper by Overpeck et al. That appeared a few months back in BIOS. But I think the point to be made here is that it is a bit of an open process. You have to have some goals. You have to have a mode of doing synthesis. And I would argue you need to have some final products. And from that, you'll get people to focus on particular issues, and you'll actually get something of value. But this is very much a learning experience for the AC, and it's also a learning experience, I detect, for the community at large. And we're really at the very beginnings of this, and we are hopeful that some creative thinking about the use of data and modeling will help to clarify how synthesis could better be achieved in the Arctic realm. And the next slide asks us to move forward. So I'd like to open up the discussion now to the group at large. Again, restating it, what modeling and data integration methods, what approaches, what activities will best help us to achieve synthesis and uncover some new understandings about how the Arctic system is working. And if you hit the button again, we could do this through workshops, intercomparison projects, community-based models, community-based data sets, use of reanalysis, impact assessments such as IPCC and ACIA, which are fundamentally synthesis exercises, or Arctic-centric Earth system models like the Earth system grid, but focusing on the Arctic. And these are just a few ideas, and they're just meant to prompt discussion. And so I guess at this point we should open it up for discussion, but there might be another slide, right, Arcus friends? Is there one more slide? Okay, so I guess we could open it up for discussion, and we'll try to take good notes and bring this into our dialogue.
Anybody has a question or comment, they can just click on the hand raising feature.
This is John Wiggily. I'm trying to formulate my question first before I jump in and click on before I jump in with the first one. I'm clicking my hand. it was interesting, certainly at the synthesis workshop number two that I was involved in. Again, that was as a synthesis activity for that number of people, it worked really. You know, I think it was a useful exercise. And the one I did, we combined some climate science with some social science and a bit of the fisheries and the fire and the permafrost degradation parts sort of tied in together and how those are all changing with what kind of trajectory. There were certainly parts of that and parts of that synthesis process that it seems like there's a whole lot of other questions you could attack in that way, and it certainly and it and you could do more in the social, you know, tying in the social science part with other aspects like the marine biology and the terrestrial biology, and you know, there's just innumerable questions you could approach in that way, and I'd like to. We haven't really. I haven't talked much about with the other, like the Arts Committee, about whether or not we sort of look forward, or does the community out there, the Arts Committee, want to continue those kinds of workshops, which have, you know, a limited subset number of people, about 25 people, and do things in the same way with different. Different focused questions or areas that we approach, or is that something that the community or the people out there saw that as, even from the outside, saw that as something that seemed worthwhile, or seemed like, well, if they're doing it, fine, but it doesn't really help the community, the rest of us, or something like that. So I'd be interested in hearing about that, and what if there's other questions that people want to address, is that a good way to address them?
So your question is,
what does the community think of that, of what they saw coming out of the synthesis workshops, and when they saw what we did they want to sort of attack different aspects of questions in that way?
This is Wendy. I don't know if you can hear me. I have a funky phone.
Yeah.
I think really what I want to hear from people is what is needed now to get toward this integration of research with data coordination, not just data coordination in general, but not just did the synthesis workshops do something useful, but I want to hear people's thoughts about what is needed now. What do we need to be doing?
Agree on a programming language.
Who said that?
Sorry, it was Lil.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Lil. You mean a programming language for models like Fortran, C++? What are you thinking?
Yeah, that's what I'm. Well, first of all, if we're talking about, I really think that the cellular. Well, when you put up the inductive deductive.
Yeah.
Now it looks like it's amenable to cellular modeling, which requires the first step that we agree as a community what kinds. With an S of languages,
yeah.
Programming languages, we're going to work in, because that will allow us to organize so that when we trade data sets, when we exchange data sets, say we do become an open source community modeling framework, that those data sets are compatible with each other when we start to try and integrate them and model them.
So interoperability is what you're
correct.
Broadly discussing.
Yeah, interoperability, but really specifically agreeing on which platforms we're going to carry as a community.
This is John Wadley. I was just going to say, part of that, you know, almost gets into the open source, you know, kind of approach, which is you have a community model that it might address any kind of particular question, but at least it's got a community base that is going to either add to it and make it accessible to different, it's got a framework and people might add something that's going to add this functionality or that functionality. That's for a specific kind of model. The fact is there are, as we've sort of touched on in different ways, a whole lot of different kinds of models. You talk about different frameworks of, you know, just for each different application. It's not all climate modeling from my aspect.
How would you use that? I'm just curious, Will. How would you use that? Would you basically have people back at their home institutions cobbling their code and their data sets on a particular...
No.
But what are you thinking?
No, what I'm thinking is right now everybody has a bunch of data sets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those data sets consist of Excel sheets, SPSS sheets. They consist of raw numbers. Is that right? And they consist of either... they primarily consist of raw numbers and they can consist of models. But what we could do is find a platform, like say, are you familiar with CORMAS, CORMAS?
No.
Anybody?
Nope.
CORMAS, Swarm?
Swarm.
Yes?
Heard it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for example, what you can do is each of these, let's call them bits that describe part of the system, can then be assembled in some kind of common framework and then used for whatever question, say, a researcher wants or a group wants to address. I think we've got to move into the group.
Mm-hmm.
So say, for example, we want to look at the change in my interest in local scale winter-based flows of rivers as it relates to discontinuous permafrost. Let's just say that that's an example, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What I would do is I would acquire those data sets with all the caveats that go with it, assemble it in, say, CORMAS, as a dynamic feedback model, which basically I would put in the rules based on what researchers have determined are the behaviors of discontinuous permafrost under certain scenarios, construct it in CORMAS, and then run it in that with some kind of spatial platform like GRASS, which accepts very robust biophysical parameters and gives you spatial location. So it actually will produce your area of interest as a topography, as a layer.
How would you convince a field researcher to adopt that as his or her modus operandi?
Oh, a field researcher being defined as whom? Like
someone who goes out and collects discharge data and does field experiments.
Well, they don't have to. That's the beauty of this. Is if somebody, I mean, realize that this requires that we as a community make a commitment to either to learn something new, which is not a minor task, but they wouldn't have to. What they could do is contribute to the construction of their data in the platform.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't actually have to, I mean, ideally they would know the algorithms, but they wouldn't have to actually use the or be in CORMAS programming.
Charlie, this is Ed.
Hi, Ed.
This is all sort of technical stuff, and I think that our problems are somewhat more fundamental than that.
Okay, fire away.
Yeah. The question we have up on the screen is somewhat restrictive, and I'm not sure whether what I'm going to say now really applies, and if it doesn't, you tell me.
Okay.
We went forward with this hydrology system for the Arctic, mostly because you hydrologists had your act together and were ready to go. and we thought that you needed to know water before you could know the biogeochemistry. But now, the biogeochemistry is 5-10 years behind the game, and we really need to catch up. And the problem with doing it as a separate thing now is that now we have to rely on the hydrology through filtered through a model, so you don't have the side-by-side temporal consistency between the two types of measurements. So I think that we really need to think about how we're going to bring the biogeochemistry and the community population ecology up to where the hydrologists are. And that's probably true of other fields, too.
Yeah, that sort of aims at the heart of this issue of the observational fragmentation. I mean, we have different time domains, space domains, et cetera. And so how do we try to bridge those gaps? That's a fundamental question. You're right. It's absolutely fundamental.
So those of us who try to build models and try to get the data to constrain those models know the problem of, okay, well, I have this data from this ecosystem at this time, and I have this other data from this other ecosystem at a slightly different time, and trying to piece them together, just the added noise of having to borrow from, every ecosystem is unique. From different temperate forests and different climatic regimes to try to get enough numbers to get a single model up and running is a real problem. If we can coordinate things so that we're working together, but everybody speaks about the old IBP days and how the models were running everything. Well, at least you had the data all from, one site, and they were consistent with each other, but it really helps in terms of the model development.
So would you be, if the idea is to better understand the workings of the Arctic in the broader Earth system, we've got to be really talking about, at some level, the Pan-Arctic. Would you argue for archetypical sites, emblematic sites around the Arctic in which you would have this spatial and temporal coherence in terms of the observations? Is that what you would be arguing for?
That's certainly what, the LTERs and the NEONs and that sort of thing are going to provide for us, and we have to be creative about how to extrapolate from those few points. The picture you showed of the measurements and the model coverage is, that's the way it would work. I mean, it's the models that are going to do that extrapolation for you.
Uh-huh.
I'm more concerned that we're missing things on the way. It has seemed this way to me for quite a while, that we have jumped from the plot scale to the Pan-Arctic scale, and we don't know anything about the biogeochemistry of hill slopes, how nitrogen spirals in the terrestrial system, as well as the aquatic system. I mean, the limnologists have been looking at that, but the terrestrial people have not. And those can impose some time constants on the system that are just going to take all of our modeling efforts and just throw them in the garbage because we don't have enough information on those kinds of things, and we're not supporting the modeling at those levels.
Mm-hmm.
So that worries me somewhat. Now that I've put in the pitch for my own work, I'll show you.
Well done.
Okay, Ed.
Well packaged.
John Weatherly has his hand raised next.
Thanks. So John Weatherly, let's see. We're talking about. I certainly don't. I don't want to see just the arts community itself sort of start prescribing prescribing we're going to use a programming language or data format, because certainly it's always, as people have commented, everyone's going to kind of use some of their own, but it's great if there's at least, I guess, what it'd be great if, because each discipline is sort of amenable to different kinds of structure, data structures as well as formats and the way that they sort of look at data. And what's challenging, would be great is if we had, I guess, a almost like a collaborative project, workshop kind of thing at some point by saying, okay, when we actually look at, here's what we haven't done yet, look at from different fields and different disciplines, different kinds of projects, here's the data structures that we end up with in some of these projects. And then have a few collaborations that say, how do we connect these two in terms of, are there some almost data tools or ways to almost translate data from one kind into another in a seamless way? Because those kinds of, because without sort of a push to make some of those available, they usually don't nobody develops them. And if you write an NSF proposal to say you're going to create a bunch of data tools that take one set of data like this and make it accessible to social science or something, probably won't get funded because it won't get reviewed very well. But I think at a higher level, if we say as a community we need tools that look at these kind of data on vegetation and apply it to this kind of, you know, this kind of problem, then that's something that almost as a community we could maybe ask NSF to put some money towards or something, but it wouldn't happen in a reviewed project.
Paul, do you want to bring the chat discussion that's been going on? Do you want to make your comment and bring that out into the audio?
Yes, I'd be happy to, now that I've been instigating around the sides of the conversation. The thing I'd been typing is some information about metadata, and again, I've attended several conferences where the focus has been data and metadata, and my sense is that there isn't a principal investigator on the planet who wants to give his or her data up. And more to the point, they don't want to give it up in a common format. So I think we are really, swimming upstream in this case. The other observation, which I think I typed something about, unifying questions.
Yeah, unifying questions and metadata. That was the point that got a lot of positive response in the chat.
Again, Charles did a great job with that cartoon of the interactions between the freshwater fluxes, and obviously Will also added the comment about where the people are, and that again, that just is yet another example of the fact that we, even when we're doing interdisciplinary work, we are reluctant to include all of the systems.
And Mark Parsons and Lil Lesov both had their hand raised. Mark, you want to?
Yeah. So I'm from the National Snow and Ice Data Center, so I feel like I'm obligated to comment somehow on this data issue, but I'm having a hard time getting my hands around it. Clearly, there's no way that we can have a common format or mandate a particular format. You can certainly be more rigorous in metadata, which will help with interoperability. And ultimately, you can create tools that can allow, that can change formats or grids or what have you and make them work better into a given model. The problem, though, is sort of getting everybody to agree on what the issue is. You know, which model are we feeding and how, and I think that's where the unifying questions come in. If you can identify sort of a sub-community that can generate requirements, then the data people can serve that better. Because otherwise, we're just sort of shooting in the dark. And then also, format point, it's way more than formats, because just for example, with ASCII data, someone puts, air temperature in column 3, and someone else puts it in column 6, and they call it AT instead of temp, and there becomes a lot of issues there. And so one question I had to Charlie in preparing that very nice flow chart of all the freshwater flows, what did you do? You obviously had to do a lot of this data integration to get that all together. What did you do with the final product or the derived product data?
Are you talking about the budget?
Yeah.
If Mark, are you on the phone?
I don't think Mark is on the phone? I don't think he is.
Okay. Well, Mark actually was the one who led that charge. He's in the so-called budgeteers group. And he went through the literature, and he extracted the salient features of the particular studies that he looked at that would inform their particular exercise, which is trying to get this panarctic view. They also had, I should mention, they also had a very, very clearly defined geographic boundary, and you would get very different results if you drew the boundaries differently from what they actually came up with. So they had some very early on prescribed spatial domains and temporal domains that they would allow to be eligible to enter into that calculation. In the end, I don't know if he's actually taking any of the subsidiary information and mounting it. We certainly, if there's a value in doing so, we can, through the FWI effort, bring that to the community. We could actually try to organize those data sets in a downloadable form where he, you know, anyone could go there and get the subsidiary information. The end point of that effort was this box diagram with maybe 40 numbers populating that diagram. Any of the subsidiary information could, in fact, be archived, and we didn't actually think about that, but that's a great idea.
Charlie, I think we've got Lil Lessa next, and then Mark
Steiglitz. I still think it's important that we differentiate between. I think the unifying question is important, but that we differentiate between the metadata challenge, the human nature of the researchers and access to metadata challenge, and then the platform challenge, which is a synthesis challenge, and we have to make sure, be careful that we don't lump all those into one thing, because we'll have to tackle them differently.
Did you say that again? I'm not sure I followed.
Well, we have the problem with metadata, which I think Paul raised, and then we have the need to develop some unifying questions. Okay, which I think we're well on the way to. And then the third part of that we can't lump in with the rest but are related to it is the final actual execute on the ground, let's do this, synthesis mechanics. And those are three different things. They're related, but they have to be just teased out and worked on specifically.
Yeah.
Should I?
Mark, did you want to go ahead? And...
Yeah, I guess I have two issues. One relates to the data itself. I mean, in my mind, I'm less worried about the data format. I think that the large climatological data, the river data, the air temperature, the large climate variables, we can put into a format that all of us can use and have used. As you get to more mechanistic data, the data is kept at LTERs, I don't know that you can get them in any satisfactory sort of format, in that at some point you're going to have to work with the researcher who took the data in order to feel understanding of what the data means. The second point was about models. And what I think, with regard to modeling, what I would like to know as a modeler is there's a variety of complexity of models. I can build a model with 10 parameters, much more empirical. One with 20 parameters, still empirical. You get to more and more parameters, you're getting more mechanistic. What I would like to know out there, and I think, you know, if we could come to some agreement, you say, okay, I have a model with 10 parameters. This is what I'm based. Is there panarctic data for this? Okay, if there is, then you can use that model. Then you say, and you get more mechanistic, and you say, is there the data for this 30-parameter model? And the answer is no. The answer then is either we're going to support a modeling, an effort to yield those variables, or you have to say, okay, that's the limit of where we can go. But I don't think we all know what kind of models we can use. At LTERs, we can use one kind, but I would still like to know, on some large scale, what are the big variables that we have the whole suite of them, and start to delineate, because that will form sort of the basis of where you can say you can build your models up to, and then you sort of say, you know, where's our next stage in the next 10 years? What else do we want in models? And then are we going to support the efforts to gain those variables? And if not, then you don't build those models. So that's the two points I wanted to discuss.
Carl Hild, you made a comment on chat that I think would be good to have on the record.
Yeah. Hi, Wendy. About 12, 13 years ago, when the AMAP group was first getting together, the Arctic Monitoring Assessment Program, there was a lot of discussion about can each of the eight Arctic nations just contribute data into a massive data set and we can answer these questions quickly. And the more the group discussed, the more they realized that there was no intercomparability between the data. And this is particularly true in regards to the health and social sciences materials, but it also is true for the aquatic and terrestrial, the POPs groups, the heavy metal groups, the radionuclide groups, so that what was agreed upon was a series of questions. And within the health group, as much as we wanted to know the impacts of all these various contaminants on the body, what we ended up doing was saying, can we agree to collect a certain number of umbilical cord bloods and having them analyzed in a cross-certified laboratory system. Very, very basic, but what it did was it gave a snapshot of certain patterns. Now, 12, 15 years later, people are going back and saying, why is it that those patterns are higher in the Davis Strait area than in other areas of the Arctic? And we're beginning to see, well, that's where the contaminants land in the Arctic Ocean. They come down on the river. They accumulate in the marine mammal fats, highest levels of subsistence activity. So a lot could be teased out that would have never been found had we said we were going to try to do a synthesis of how contaminants move around the Arctic. It came from a specific question of if we had a little bit of money and we wanted to collect one particular type of data in all nations, what would that be? Each nation did it its own way, but ultimately we were able to get the cross-certified labs so that the data was consistent and comparable.
Yeah, very interesting example of unifying questions.
Right. Yeah, it's the question, not the data.
Yeah.
One of the I think the successful elements of the FWI is that we decided on our questions pretty early on, and in fact we published those questions back in the year 2000, and they were, in a sense, they were broad enough so that we could engage a fairly large community of researchers, but they were in some sense specific and compelling enough that we'd actually learn something about the system. We had basically three questions. The first, is the Arctic freshwater cycle intensifying? Okay. The second was, if it is intensifying, why is that happening? And the third question is, what are the implications of these changes? And we're actually making headway on all three questions. And I think that the key is, if we are thinking about doing synthesis, I think necessarily we're probably thinking about organizing groups. And so I think that the important aspect of all this is that you've got to mobilize teams of researchers around particular what we've been talking about here, unifying questions. I think that there's a great value in doing that, and the community does rise to that occasion. And so, Carl, you also use a very interesting example of that happening along the data lines.
So the other comment that's been made on the chat line, some public and some private, is that there's a really, really, in this approach you're talking about, there's a really critical data coordination, data center function and funding that sort of process. Does anyone want to speak to that?
This is Mark again. It's, to me that's somewhat self-evident, and but I think part of the point with what Carl was getting at was that if there's a greater agreement by the investigators up front to do something in a coordinated manner, then that actually reduces the data synthesis, data management costs, because, you know, you're starting with a simpler set, as it were.
Right. Yeah.
If I might just add, Charlie, the search group or the search initiative has a data management
group that's formed, and they've actually did some thinking about this, and they come to the conclusion as well that you need some appropriate level of information coordination, and perhaps cast not as a formal center or anything like that, but as a service to the community along the lines of particular issues that would require harmony across some of the data sets. So again, I think this idea of critical focal points or critical questions, and then as parsimoniously as possible, serving the needs of the community on the data and modeling interoperability might be the best way to go. But I leave that open to discussion here. I don't want to prescribe that as a formal strategy.
I'll just echo that the IPY, International Employers, taking a similar strategy, but there isn't really the unifying questions in IPY, I don't think. It's
right.
Really bring it together.
This is Carl again. I recently participated in a seminar with Bob Correll, who is one of the forces behind the Arctic Climate Impact Assessment. And I think what he was seeing is the fact that, yes, there is a freshening of the Arctic because the temperatures are going up and the fresh water is becoming available. The concern about what's driving the currents for the global ocean pattern is part of that concern because it's temperature as well as salt percentage driven. But when Bob got done his remarks, what he said was that we really need to start taking a look at the Arctic Human Development Report and this issue of, he used the term acoustics, that we have to know how our communities are going to be able to adapt to these shifts, and whether it's less availability of water or the fact that the matrix of permafrost is going to disappear and so communities are going to subside in one way or another, or there's going to be increased flooding. But these are, what he was seeing is that the summation of the Arctic Climate Impact Assessment and the Arctic Human Development Report are both tending to what are the questions that are going to contribute to community viability. And I haven't heard that discussion. There was one question earlier in the dialogue about, I think Lil raised it, where are the people? I think this is going to be one of the key issues, that we have a number of communities in the Arctic that are going to be challenged by the changes of the hydrology as well as the stability of the ground that they reside on.
And Lil has her hand raised. Do you have a comment?
Sorry?
Do you have a comment? You had your hand raised?
Yeah, I'm going back to that slide. It says question mark workshops, intercomparison, community-based models. I think we should stay focused on how we're going to do this. I think everybody agrees that we need some kind of data. We need some kind of data centralization. We need some kind of interoperability. I think we can start a community-based model, and I think we can do one with the Arctic that fits into some of the global models, and that kind of synergy will be really beneficial. But I think we should be really clear about answering the question that Charlie put forth at the beginning of this, so that at the end of this we have something to put forth when people read this. So where do we want to go, guys?
So, Paul, you raised an interesting question about funding with a question about NSF policy that I thought you mind saying that question, comment?
I'm happy to talk. I put my hand up just for you, Wendy.
Oh, thank you.
My typed comment was had to do with the what seems to be a policy, and I could be wrong in this. I'm not closely involved anymore, but over the past several years, whenever a suggestion was made to try to go back and get old data sets and put them into the community data centers, that was not viewed as useful, whereas getting new and exciting data sets that may or may not go into the data centers is always much more interesting.
I'm sorry, who's viewing it that way?
That's a personal observation.
This is, can you hear me? This is Florence Federer with NSIDC. I'm joining late.
Hi, Florence.
Yeah, we can hear you.
I just want to say in response to Paul's comment that one approach for getting older data into the data centers is to propose products that combine data from many sources in a package. So there's sort of synthesis products. So one example might be a very successful example is COADS, the ocean data set. Another example that I don't think has been done would be a precipitation data set for the Arctic. There are bits and pieces here and there, but as far as I know, there hasn't been a coordinated effort to bring all the precipitation data together in one quality-controlled data set. So it would take a community effort to do that.
So you're basically recommending something along the lines of, let's say, data bundles, thematic bundles that would get the best kind of state-of-the-art and maybe even a reanalysis of some of the information to get rid of some of the problems associated with it and get it out there to the community. Is that
right? Exactly. It's not simply a matter of documenting data sets coming in from a variety of PIs and wrapping some metadata around them. It's the actual getting the science content in with the data so that it's all in one bundle, all in one package.
Right.
Well, and Charlie, that's I guess what I was trying to get at with my question about the budgeteers collection. Mm-hmm. I mean, isn't that in essence or it's partway toward such a bundle or a
second bundle? Yeah, it's partway towards it, but of course this is a very eclectic amassing of information. In some cases using satellite information, in other cases using reanalysis products, in other cases using point scale, in situ data that were extrapolated, or cruise transect information. So in terms of what I just heard in terms of this data bundling, I get a very different sense about that because, for example, if you did try to get the world's best Arctic precipitation data sets together, you probably are talking about both in situ, an in situ archive, a comprehensive in situ archive, and maybe some interpolated or derived products that would be spatially and temporally contiguous. The effort with that budget exercise really was an amalgam of many different types of data. So you wouldn't get the kind of coherence that I thought we were just talking about. So it's a little bit different, a little bit different.
Ed Rathsetter has his hand raised.
Yeah. Well, first off, I want to say that I do appreciate everything that you data managers do for us. And with that in mind, I'll say that I don't think the problem is data management. I think the problem is the wrong kinds of data. People are collecting data, and they don't have a model in mind other than some silly ANOVA problem. And the data collection becomes very efficient if there's a question or a model in mind. You know, synthesis that was done. There was a question in mind, and they went and they mined the data to address that particular question. And that's the way these things always work. I just don't think that the data management is the problem. Sorry.
Well, is there a problem, Ed?
Yeah, I think that people don't have models in mind when they're collecting the data, when they're collecting their data. They go out and say, oh, let's go do another analysis of variance on, you know, nitrogen fertilizer or phosphorus or irrigation or something like that. They never have a mechanistic model in mind.
So what would be the proactive counter to that trend? How would you counteract that trend?
Don't let NSF fund anything that doesn't have a model in the proposal.
Hear that, Neil?
That's Vladimir here. Oh, I have.
Yes.
Thanks for.
He's got a point. So, Vladimir, did you want to make a point?
Yeah, I think it's a very good point, and I think in terms of integration, you have to try to integrate somehow between people who do measurements and people who do modeling. So I kind of familiar from both sides, and sometimes we don't know exactly what models I need from the measurements, and it will be nice to know, because very often I feel like modelers really don't need anything from measurements, and it's even better sometimes there's really no measurements. So I think it's good question, and it probably can move our integration and eventually synthesis forward if we will have better dialogue between modelers and people who do measurements. And it's exactly a very good point. We cannot measure everything everywhere, so we have to really very good strategy what to measure and where to measure.
Mark makes a very good point as well, Mark Parsons on the chat.
I was just saying that, I'll just echo what I just said, what I typed, that it definitely helps you collect your data and archive it more effectively if you know to what purpose the data is going. But you do need to recognize that some of the great strides in science come from unanticipated use of the data. So there is still a data management consideration there, or an archiving consideration, I guess I would say.
And Jesse Cherry has her hand raised.
Yeah, I was wondering if whoever is controlling the slides could go back to the synergy slide with the matrices. I think it's number 9.
With the two box diagram examples.
Yeah.
The checkerboard.
Yeah, the checkerboard.
Great.
The checkerboard on the right that refers to the model outputs has a uniform level of quality is implied by the color, and we know that that's not true. And so it would be nice if we could go and assign a quality rating by decade over space for the variables we care about to know that our deductions that we're making from this method are correct, and that we know we don't have a lot of the first order processes in our climate models, for example. Maybe better communication between the land surface modelers and the observationalists could inform the important areas we need to do in the model development.
Good point. I was being magnanimous by giving it a light blue color.
You're being generous.
There you go. Well, just taking this diagram now, how might the community build around these notions? Vladimir, Ed articulated the fact that the observations do need to inform the models, and the modelers need to talk to the observationalists to make sure that the kinds of information that is being yielded by these monitoring programs are going to make some sense, maybe not to the exclusion of any other curiosity-based science, but certainly to optimize the interaction and treat it maybe less as an afterthought, but more in some sense inculcated from the start in terms of how you formulate your questions, how you cast the model, how you optimize the use of existing or new observations to help your project along. But what is it that we could do as a community to help facilitate that? Should we be thinking of having, let's say, a series of workshops with this very question in mind, or should we have a few researchers get together, write a proposal, and try to show a couple of worked examples, maybe some interdisciplinary examples that would involve some social science dimensions linking to some physical dimension models, and as well observations and data sets. What does a community feel would be worthwhile to engage in as a set of very concrete activities? What could we do to promote this idea that's been thrown out on the table?
Develop the unifying questions.
Okay, and we develop the unifying questions. Let's say we come up with 12 really great synthetic questions. What do you then do?
what's the next step? I agree. You need these questions. These are the focal points for the community. Now what do? Do you have retreats, summer retreats for 2 weeks? Do you send students off to an island for 6 months and have them come back with the answer? Well, what do we do?
Can I answer?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I think everybody's going to have a different vision of what this is, but I think that by agreeing on some kind, and I'm just defining this for Mark, some kind of open interoperational language is really a key step. It goes to how data are organized, how they're collected, and then how they're disseminated. But that's the next step, is just agreeing on based on those questions, how we're going to implement the synthesis. And that really does require some kind of speaking the same language.
Okay, so you have the questions and you have this new language or this new interoperability capability. Then how does one exercise that? What would you anticipate? What would you do with these tools?
Well, I would do a community-based framework. That's what I would do, but everybody's going to have a different idea.
Well, sure, but that's why we're talking, to get those out there. So what do you mean by a community activity? What are you thinking specifically of? Workshops, homework assignments for 100 researchers? What are you really thinking of?
I'm in my own head, the vision is a central, just as Wendy or somebody said, a central place, and I think old data are really exciting, but a central place where the expertise in these languages begins, and then what we need to do is kind of do this education effort slowly. And I don't know that workshops, a single workshop is going to do it. I think PIs are going to have to kind of volunteer to be, I'm not going to say retrained, but to be additionally trained to be able to speak the language and contribute to this community framework. So education really of the PIs at this point, after we get a node established that can start executing and facilitating the education.
Last October, the ARCS Committee discussed, and that's one of the reasons this working group was formed, the ARCS Committee discussed the possibility of starting some of this dialogue by having a workshop with modelers and observationalists to try to approach some of these issues of unifying questions and the language and interoperability and the connection between observations and models and so on. And workshops by their nature tend to be maybe 2, 3, maximum 4 days. Would an initial sort of scoping workshop be useful, or could enough be done in that time to make it worthwhile? So that's one of the questions we have, since that was one of the ideas that has been raised. Charlie also put out there the concept of summer sessions of 6 weeks that are really focused on some very specific and focused questions. So I'm throwing that out to the participants on this call to ask for feedback on that.
Vladimir, may I say?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think modelers should take lead here and formulate their needs in terms of what to measure and especially where to measure, and then from that point, both modelers and measurers can look what's already available and. From there, we'll see some gaps which need to be filled with a new data collection. I think it could be a pretty efficient approach in terms of use already what we have. But again, maybe I'm wrong, but I think the modelers should take lead in this development.
John, you had a comment on that.
Yes, thanks. I agree, and we're saying, you know, what can we do to facilitate this? And we're talking about, you know, sort of getting people together to agree on where they're going to measure and what, you know, with some common data formats or language. We'll say data formats is a bad word, we'll say data language or some structure. And I think that's what's been successfully done. I think in some of these past projects that went from Shiba to SBI, where they sort of agreed before they went out in the field coordinated where they're going to measure or what they were going to do with the data to share it. In the current ARCS structure in terms of community, I think part of where that's going to possibly go on is in our community. I'm going to call them our co-ops.
Community of practices.
Our co-ops are community of practices. Whereas I think within those groups, I think if we again continue to foster and support those groups, if they get together, you know, they will have their own integrating questions and the best idea between them as to where they're going to measure and how they're going to share the data. Clearly, those are the groups that will end up being connected the most, and focused on particular questions of their own. So in some sense, I think a lot of those groups will bring in modelers, obviously, in their own groups. And maybe it's part of our, as a community or as the ARCS group and the committee as well, to help guide those groups. They're self-forming, but we can also suggest, you might need some, there's some modelers out there that are looking at different aspects that might add to the question or something like that. So you can obviously give their opinion as to what they might what might help in that area. So, but I think those are the locations where this is probably going to go on the most in terms of planning ahead and deciding how our data and models are going to address the questions together.
Great. And Dan White has his hand raised.
Yeah, I guess as I'm sitting there listening and thinking about this, one of the issues that we're struggling with a lot is how to deal with data that may be used in models that look at different scales, and how do we deal with scaling effects, particularly if we're collecting water use data, which is what I work with, and the data that we collect and the way we collect it for regional scale modeling is very different than Pan-Arctic scale modeling, and I guess maybe kind of going back to what Vlad said about looking at or getting the modelers together to decide what they want. I think there's maybe an opportunity, and I guess I like the kind of couple-day workshop model or couple-day workshop proposal to get together and get the modelers that look at different scale stuff together along with the people like me that may be collecting the data so that we can ensure that a Pan-Arctic or a global scale modeler isn't directing the data collection such maybe insufficient data is being collected for a regional scale modeler.
Right, yeah. Key question. Carl, you had your hand raised.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Hi, this is Carrie Feldman. I'm on Carl's unit here. I'm an anthropologist at the University of Alaska Anchorage. I just put a question up there in response to Lil's notion and others of what might be some questions that we ask. I'm wondering how we tie these data sets to human communities and if that is a concern. One of the things I was thinking about as I listened to this discussion is that we come up with a typology of human communities across the Arctic. I suggested a couple, urban-rural. The changes in the Arctic are going to be very different on urban people compared to rural people. And then you have different kinds of rural people. You have some that are primarily wage-based, but some that are highly mixed economy, highly native groups. And I was wondering if, we could identify maybe, eight or nine or 10 variables or changes in the physical environment that are going to impact these different types of communities differently. The models that are being talked about seem to have a lot of averaging in them, perhaps. Maybe I don't understand the modeling exercise. But as you know, averages can have wide extremes, and if we want, and there's going to be a tremendous difference between some communities depending on where they're located and others. And the part of the data gathered would be very measurement-based at the community level in terms of hydrology or in terms of impacts on animals, availability of various species, whaling, and those measurable data could then be perhaps at some time, this might take several years, could be converted into modeling for different kinds of effects on different kinds of communities. I don't know if I stated that well. I'm done.
Go ahead. Jennifer, you posted a question on chat.
Yes,
there, Jennifer, and then a number of people gave really good feedback to that question. Would you be willing to kind of summarize that?
I was just typing something, so I'll stop typing. But my question was, can we look back through our mental memory banks and think of the synthesis activities that we've been either a part of or know of and that related to data, which would exclude things like the Big Sky workshop, I think, because that was not really data, but ones that did incorporate various kinds of information, various scales, and it relates back to a lot of things that other people have said, but just trying to identify what were the common pieces of those activities that made it successful that had to do with assembling different sorts of data, and some of the responses that I've seen include things like getting the description of the data right, and that could be metadata. And one of the key ones that that I was sort of headed towards and was typing about was this idea of a hero. And I think the ones that I can think of certainly had a point person who was the coordinator of the information from the various groups that were involved in answering the unifying questions, which was another thing that came up. So that's really what my question was about.
And Matt's point with the hero is that it's not just a data coordination, but it's like an investigator who understands linking data modelers and who can coordinate and drive the synthesis, which is even a little bit different than just the basic data management and data
exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I'm just thinking of my own case where, I do my science, but I would never profess to be any sort of an expert with respect to data management. And, I'm happy to produce data, but it would be, a nightmare for someone else to try to use. So to have somebody who was really good at that sort of thing and also saw the big picture and how it all fit together, I think is absolutely important.
Okay. And Mark, you made the point about metadata and interoperability. I think we need to bring the ETON meeting to a close because we're going to start losing people. Do you want to say anything more about that in response to these, what are the key kind of things that need to be done?
Well, I think Jennifer hit it. Just that one of the key common denominators or linkage is well-described data, and ideally relatively simple data, which I think gets back to Lil's point that it needs to be fitting into that overarching vision, whatever. But I guess, well, since I still have the floor, I was curious about the hero. So the hero, I think, is a good point. The best efforts have someone who's leading the charge. But that's more than a data person. But then Jennifer said that she needed data support. So is there maybe two roles there? One is the sort of project coordinator who's getting everybody talking to each other, getting agreement, keeping people focused on the overarching question. But then maybe there's sort of a data consultant that reaches across the question to help people with some of the technical issues that, you know, the investigator may not be particularly versed in, to help the modeler's needs translate to the observationalist who's collecting the data.
Matt Duvall, can you speak to that?
Yeah, I think Mark's hit it right on the head, actually, and is that you, well, both Mark and Jennifer, is, you know, you need a project coordinator, but then you need to have a data person involved that can help the data people make the data available to the modelers, and, you know, and vice versa. You need sort of a couple different components there. You know, Mark's data consultant, I think, is the perfect way to frame that position. So in addition to a hero, you need a
consultant. So, Charlie, I think we need to end soon, and I was going to turn this back to you, but I thought it would be good to ask before we do that if there's anyone on the call who has some basic burning question or point they wanted to make that they haven't had an opportunity to make yet before we close this out.
Wendy.
Who's that?
It's Jeff Welker. Can I say one word?
Yeah, I invited it.
It seems to me one of the issues here is how do you kind of get people together and talking? And, you know, we've talked about these issues before, but I'm wondering if we don't want to think a little bit grander in scale, that if we're going to be headed to a scenario where we're constantly doing synthesis and integration, needing to get people together at all levels, I'm wondering if something like a science and technology center couldn't be put forward at some point in time, or start thinking in those types of directions where we would have a very concentrated, focused, well-funded entity that would be engaging the community in these types of activities. Something less than that, and we haven't talked about here much today, is the NCs. I mean, that's an entity which various groups in the community has used for synthesis, modeling, producing products like papers and those types of activities. And I really haven't heard much talk about, you know, using that in terms of moving forward.
You know, it's interesting. The Arctic Champ FWI effort was spawned at NCEAS because we lacked any other vehicle or center to incubate that idea. And so that's a point really well taken, that maybe there needs to be some type of an institutional structure that would foster this kind of thinking.
Well, it does come down to having the resource base to do this, and one of the things that seems critical is that if you look at some of the synthesis activities, it isn't taking advantage of all the PIs that are funded out there, because there's a limited resource base for these types of things. I mean, you know, right now we've got a synthesis deadline next week, and you know, the funding level is pretty modest, and the competition is going to be very keen, so there's going to be a lot of unmet needs. And thinking again, you know, the Science and Technology Center thinking could be strategic for us. I don't think it's beyond this community to do something at that scale.
Very interesting idea.
Okay.
Well, should we end now, group? Shall we wrap this up fairly quickly? I think we said we'd be going for about an hour and a half, and it's a little bit longer than that. Are there any other issues on the table? I can't see the hands going up. Are there any other comments?
Don't see any. Carl Hild has a comment. Go ahead, Carl.
Hey, this is Kerry Feldman again, using Carl's phone. I was wondering if the University of Alaska wants or needs something like a human ecology center that would interface with the physical scientists who are doing all this modeling, and they don't know who to talk to when it comes to impacts on humans, perhaps. I mean, there's no one center for it. So I just throw that out. I don't know if you want to call it a human ecology or human dimension center, so I'm just throwing that out as an idea.
Okay. And Paul Binhoff, you said on chat that limited resources are often gone by the time we're ready to process and archive data. Do any NSF program managers want to comment on that?
I just said I was going to log off, but
oh,
I will.
Sorry.
That's all right. We are doing what we can to address data. In fact, in the current announcement of opportunity for IPY, there's an opportunity for putting in proposals for exactly this sort of thing. We do what we can. We're supporting data at considerable levels right now. It's not enough, but we're doing what we can. I'd also point out, I think it was Jeff who said that this was a small announcement. I mean, we spent $7 million on synthesis last year, and we're probably going to spend another $7 million this year. I wouldn't call that small, but I guess that depends on whether you're giving it out or trying to receive it. Don't think I have anything else to add.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. So I guess we should wrap it up. This has been very enlightening, and I really do once again thank you on behalf of the AC and our little data and modeling group for your time and your insights. I guess what we should try to do is we should try to distill the ideas that were tossed out into this forum, and we'll try to get that back out to you and to the community at large for comment. Our idea was that we would be staging this first town meeting today, and we're going to discuss this, but the idea was perhaps to have another town meeting after thinking a little bit more and distilling some of these ideas in the May 06 time frame, another eTown meeting. And then if it looks as though it would be fruitful, to stage a face-to-face meeting, a little workshop during the summer. And I think that if we set about with a well-circumscribed set of goals to produce a rationale for what we're trying to do here, create a little inventory of needs, and then outline some practical steps forward to institute this interaction between data modeling and synthesis, I think that would be of great value to the community at large and certainly would help ARCS think about strategies for actually investing in these types of studies. So I do thank everyone again. If we have any other questions or comments, why don't you try to send those via email on the list of participants that you've seen, I think, circulated by Laura. So with that, I guess we could draw this to a close. It's been interesting. Thanks for your participation.